waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. I look at probably what is going to be one of those moments in 30, 40 years that our grandchildren look back and go, what in the hell were you thinking about? Where were you? What did you do? What did you do to stop the atrocities? What did you do to stop an authoritarian regime from ripping children from their parents and throwing them in the cages? What did you do? You know, kind of one of those dark stains on our history, like we look back to the Japanese internments. Only I think this is even more cruel, because you're ripping the families apart, and reports that I'm seeing, a lot of these kids may never get back with their parents. That's one of the things that just, you know, as a parent, I don't even know how you begin to deal with. And I don't know how you deal with seeing firsthand the kind of atrocities. These children who are malnourished, these children who are dehydrated, these children who are dirty and unbathed and terrified. I don't know how you deal with that, which is why I've asked my next guest, Ashton Taylor, to come talk with us. She's a University of Texas pre-med student, also someone, a medical volunteer in McAllen, Texas. Ashton, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi there. How are you, Rick?
I'm good, but I got to tell you, these are those moments where I hate doing this program, because this is really horrible stuff.
Naturally, and it is. I mean, it's like bile coming back up when I have to, you know, talk about it again. But I do think this is a necessary evil, both to bear witness and to tell the American public what is going on and the atrocities that are occurring and continue to occur right now in our country.
You know, I look at this and you know, the hope is that the mass of us, we can plead ignorant. We don't know. And when we find out and when we hear, we then become outraged. My fear is that we become so desensitized that, they're not our kids, so what?
Right. And then that's the issue with it, is that they're not our kids, they're not our citizens. But these are children, these are babies, these are mothers and fathers, and these are people whom I've personally spoken to. And when it makes a difference. You know, there's a cognitive dissonance, you know, when you say us versus them. But when you really get down on the ground level at ground zero and you look at a sick child and a mother who wants to give care to her sick child, but she hasn't been able to because she's been locked in essentially a cage for weeks on end, there are no more boundaries. And we're past the idea of political boundaries. This is past partisan politics. I mean, whether you're for open borders, closed borders, what have you, this isn't even an issue of politics anymore. This is an issue of humanity. Yeah, and I think it touches to us on our basis instinct of humanity.
Well, I hope so anyway. You know, but here's the thing that gets me, and you can help me here. Because as I'm being told, a lot of the folks that are put into these cages and are locked up tried to come here, quote unquote, the right way. And this is where, you know, this is where it all breaks down for me, because everyone said, they ran across the border. No, they tried to come here the right way, and this is how they were treated. So what message does that say for anyone else who wants to try and come here the right way?
Right. And then the word that I would use is deterrent. And the word that I've used, ICE and CBP officials that I've heard them use, is deterrent. And these are scare tactics. These are real physical torture tactics employed by our military, by other militaries in some cases, to deter people from coming over and fleeing and seeking asylum, even the legal way. Because if anybody who's listening isn't informed, seeking asylum is not a crime, and it is not a crime across another country to cross over into our country to seek asylum. So that's not illegal to do. And so when they're detained and they're treated like this, the message that it sends is the U.S. doesn't see you as human. And we don't even see you as being entitled to basic human rights. And that's I think what should be so shocking and audacious to the American public is that we as a country have always had a philosophy of, you know, we're America, you know, we're the heroes, and we treat people with dignity and respect. We have this upright moral standing that has just crumbled into nothingness, and it's absolutely. It's outrageous. It's terrifying. And people who are seeking asylum and trying to do this the legal way, that this is the way that they're treated. And that I can't stress enough how absolutely audacious it is and how atrocious it is. And it's forever changed me. And I hope that anybody who's listening out there in the American public can put themselves in the shoes of a scared child or a scared parent and really think, what are we doing to a generation of children right now and a generation of parents? What are we doing ripping them away from their families? What are we doing keeping them in these conditions like this, keeping them sick, hungry, scared, afraid? Is this really America? Does this make America great?
I don't believe so, but, you know, back to your original point, you know, we're the land of the free and the home of the brave. And you know, I look at this not so much.
Right, exactly. And what I, you know, while I'm not exactly a legal expert, I do know that it's, you know, it's not a crime to be asylum in the United States. But besides that, I do know that it's our obligation and responsibility to render aid to these people. If anybody is sick, they have an illness or an ailment, while they're in U.S. custody, they're our responsibility to keep them at least in the very least adequately nourished, bathed, access to health care. And what I was told by New Jersey Senator Cory Booker and staff while I was down there in McAllen, we discovered this real time. There are no pediatricians in this detention facility in McAllen, Texas. It's called Ursula. No pediatricians for anywhere from 500 to 1,200 children at any given day. None.
That's just mind-blowing. But here's the thing. Look, you know, when you dehumanize someone and you treat them as less than human, why would we be surprised by any of this?
Right. I mean, it shouldn't be shocking. I think that we're getting, you know, this sort of disaster desensitization, this outrage desensitization, because we're seeing so many things, you know, in the media about, you know, what it's one disaster after another, and it's one nightmare after another that we've just, it's been sustained and we can't wake up out of. But the reality is, and what I, you know, I would kind of like to point everybody to, because I, you know, I did a little bit of research. Although the U.S. doesn't seem to be in great standing with the United Nations right now, at one point we were, and I would, you know, like to take the time to say that this, at least in part, meets the United Nations definition of genocide. We are deliberately inflicting on a group of people conditions of life calculated to bring about physical destruction in whole or in part. And that is one of the criteria that meets the United Nations definition for genocide. And we as a nation, I know that it's etched in our memories forever, and it came about in a time before I was born, but I've learned the history of it. You know, we learned about things, we learned about the Holocaust, we've learned about Japanese internment camps, and we promised ourselves as a nation never again, and it's happening right now.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, the thing is, you know, most of us don't see the faces of these children. And I can't imagine, you know, looking into the eyes of a hungry child, a sick child, and knowing that, you know, there's almost nothing that you can do to help them.
Right, and it takes every bit of strength to be strong. I mean, you have to turn into a stone wall, and you have to do your job, and you have to render aid as best you can, because you can't break down, because these people are they're so battered, they're so broken down, and yet they still have the optimism to cling to life and to cling to hope. And that is the most, I mean, it brings about a sense of shame as an American, as somebody who was raised a patriotic American. It brings such a sense of shame to look into the eyes of a sick child and to have a mother tell me, you know, in Spanish, we're kind of broken halfway translating, you know, a mother who is, her early 20s, she could be my age. She could be my cousin or my sister, and she fled organized crime syndicates because gangs had killed the rest of her family members, and she takes her young daughter and flees thousands of miles to a country where she's uncertain. She doesn't speak the language, but she's got family here, and she wants a better life. She wants to go to university, and she's crying next to me because she says she's a bad mother because her child is sick, her daughter is sick. And she's sick because she's been detained in essentially a cage, a chain link fence in a cold concrete cell for 14 days. I mean, it guts you, and it should gut you. It should gut the American public to hear these things and to imagine that that's them or that's somebody they love.
Really just heartbreaking. I mean, I keep coming back to that, and it's hard to believe that this is who we are. And it is, it's us. I mean, unfortunately, whether we like it or not, this is who the world, this is what the world sees. And this is what the world sees of us.
Right. I absolutely agree with that. It's an embarrassment. It's a travesty. I mean, it's a human rights nightmare. I would absolutely agree to that. And these are generational scars. This is trauma that doesn't go away with an ACLU lawsuit. That doesn't go away with compensation or open borders or even immediate medical care, because the damage here has been done. The damage has been inflicted. That fear, when you threaten the fear of losing your child or losing your parent, or you've been separated and you've been sick and you've been treated as less than human, these are scars that last for a lifetime if they're untreated, and God knows they probably won't be. You know, these are things that the effects of which we haven't seen, and we aren't capable of knowing until decades later what effect that this is going to have on these children and these families.
One of the maggots in the chat room said, "This is what happens when you break the law."
Well,
thoughts?
Be an interesting rhetoric. I would hope if I had gotten in trouble for any kind of unintentional trespass, I wouldn't be thrown in a dog pound jail and kept from, you know, my life-saving medication. I would hope that nobody would, you know, forget about me and tear me apart from my family and deny me legal representation. But again, I would like to reiterate that it is not a crime to seek asylum in the United States. And many, if not most of these people that I've encountered, if not all of these people that I encountered, had done so the legal way. They turned themselves in. They said, "We're here to seek asylum. We'd like to go the legal route." And this is what they were given. They were going by the laws to the best of their ability. They were advocating for themselves and their families. They're fleeing domestic violence and organized crime syndicates from destabilized developing nations. And they were doing so as best they could, abiding by U.S. law. So I would say that that's completely a spurious claim. And it really demonstrates the level of heartlessness that you have to have for saying, you know, not only something that's incorrect, but on top of incorrect, just a complete dearth of empathy and humanity.
Well, I there's part of me that thinks it's the only way that they can look themselves in the face in any type of conscience. Saying, you know, either dehumanize, they're not real people, or they're right. Illegals. There's right. Got to be a qualifier, because I still have some faith in humanity. I know I probably shouldn't, but I still have a little bit of faith that, you know, not everyone is, you know, a stone cold hearted killer and someone who wants to see genocide and this kind of stuff.
Right.
Maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, I still want to hold on to that glimpse, that slim glimpse of hope that there's some good in everybody.
I want to think the same. I really do. In addition to, you know, the atrocities that I've seen, I've also seen this tenuous and fragile and achingly beautiful optimism, not only from the immigrants who have persisted through these trials, but through American people that have just come down and said, "I want to help in any way possible." You know, I've had my social media inboxes flooded. I've had my phone ringing off the hook. You know, people, there are good American people that either they don't know what's going on and they want to know what's going on, or they have some idea what's going on and they're outraged and they want to help. And I think that's the America that we have. And we have to dismantle this sense of otherness. We have to dismantle these boundaries of, you know, oh, this otherness, whether it's, oh, this other person is an immigrant, or, oh, this other person is a maggot, which, you know, truly, somebody might ascribe to those hateful politics, and it shouldn't be tolerated. But we need to dismantle this sense of other and forsake that, I think, for a greater label, which is human. We're human, we're people, and nobody deserves this kind of treatment. Absolutely not.
Let me ask you, because you obviously were in this detention center. You've seen firsthand the conditions. You know, I've had a lot of people tell me, well, you know, it's overblown. You're being hyperbolic that they're in dog crates. You know, it's, you know, they're getting attention because, you know, you as a pre-med student, you looked into their eye and all that. How bad is it?
Well, I'd like to go ahead and qualify by saying that I was detained trying to gain entry into the ICE detention facilities. So I literally, they were not keen at all on me asking questions, on me probing, on me finding out what's going on in there. It took a U.S. senator to gain entry and to tell us directly the conditions that he's seeing and get pictures of what's going on in there. So I have seen those, and I have spoken directly with immigrants who have all attested to the same exact conditions. And no hundreds of people who don't speak English are going to come to me separately and say, independently of the photographs that were taken and independently of the things that I've witnessed, and clarify and qualify each one of those things and do so completely flawlessly without it being actual fact. I can tell you for a fact, it is as bad as you think. There are chain link fences, the floors are concrete, the walls are concrete, the ceilings are concrete, the temperature is are cold enough to sustain anywhere, any number of viral bacterial infections, upper respiratory infection, any, I wish I could, there was some way, because obviously they don't even allow cameras in there unless you are, you know, the president or one step below that. But the sentiment I would like to leave any listeners with is, it is as bad as you think and worse, because nobody, you know, nobody risks their life and crosses thousands of miles and then goes into these places and then later comes out sick from that. I mean, that alone should tell you. I mean, I'm seeing kids, kids and adults come out infested with head and body lice, open sores consistent with chickenpox or varicella, any other number of contagious diseases, flu, spread like wildfire. Every single person that I had seen was probably some degree of feverish. Every last person that I saw walk through those doors, where they were run down, they were achy, they were coughing, they had fevers. And this isn't just, oh, sniffles from traveling. This is, I have been confined in conditions where I was not allowed to sleep. The lights, the fluorescent, the floodlights, they're on 24/7. You can't sleep. You're either on the floor, or if you're very lucky, you get a very thin little mat to sleep on and maybe a space blanket. And that's if you're lucky. But oftentimes, picture yourself having to dry off in the clothes that you cross jungles and rivers and cities with. And maybe it's about 50 to 60 degrees in this facility, 60 if you're lucky, but probably colder than that. Picture you're freezing cold, you're hungry, you get one bottle of water a day and apparently two small meals, which vary from anywhere from like a sandwich to a tortilla with some ham to a bag of Lay's chips. And that's what you get for your nourishment. That's what your children get for their nourishment. And if you have anything wrong with you, you are quarantined. You're put in something called a hielero, which is Spanish for cold room or cold box. And these cold boxes are separate rooms within this detention facility that are quarantine areas, and they're incredibly cold. And this, I was told, was a practice put into place to kill the germs. And for anybody out there listening, it is not, it's not anywhere in my knowledge that we do that as any kind of medical protocol, as any sort of aseptic technique. This is literally not something that I've ever seen sanctioned by any physicians, putting people in these little cold boxes, these cold rooms, and giving them very little food and very little water. And I've had parent after parent tell me that they begged these ICE detention facility officials, please help my child. My child is sick. My child is throwing up. My child has a fever. My child has the flu. And they were given nothing. They were given no medical attention. They were given no assessment. They were given no medication. Nothing. So essentially, they've been locked in a jail. They have no advocacy. They don't speak the language. In most cases, they're separated and they can't see their children. They don't know what's happening to their kids. And they're
being tortured.
And they're being tortured. I mean, and this is torture. What I would also like to bring up, because this did come out in my notes, you know, as I was writing everything down furiously, the several parents told me that the kids and adults weren't allowed to sleep. So these floodlights are on, and these ICE detention officials are coming by, and they're kicking the children at the shoulders and the feet to keep them awake. And I was told that they're more compliant when they don't sleep. I was told that they don't fight as much when they don't sleep. When they're tired, they're exhausted, they can't fight back, they can't be fussy if they're, you know, absolutely just exhausted.
What kind of a sick human being does that?
It's sick. How could you advocate for that? But especially the children.
Yeah.
The young.
And we also hear the stories of, you know, as you're pointing out, physical abuse and sexual abuse and all of these horror stories that happen when you have this kind of power dynamic. It's disgraceful. But do you see it ending anytime soon?
Gosh, that's a difficult question. I think it's going to take outrage. It's going to take a massive outrage. It's going to take a boycott of the companies that fund these ICE detention facilities. It's going to take, you know, hitting our representatives where it hurts. Hit them in the wallet. Hit them in the ballot box. I mean, this may be the cynic in me. They won't listen until they are forced to listen. Obviously, I think that there are many higher up people that know what is going on, and they know that this has been happening for a long time. This isn't more insidious, perhaps. They planned for this to happen. Perhaps family separation you know, I'm starting to wonder if these sustained illnesses and just forsaking the home completely wasn't a side effect, but really an end game. So I think it's going to take a massive jerk in the correct direction. It's going to take a massive outrage on a massive scale. We as a nation need to know what is going on. We need to reform ourselves, arm ourselves with knowledge, then take that knowledge and do something with it to make a productive and sustainable change. And that starts with voting. That starts with finding out whoever advocated for this, whoever signed this into law, and voting every last one of them out.
Throw the bums out. That's the best way to start. And then hold them accountable. And you know,
yes,
my other part of this is I would like to see them all rounded up. Let's round all of them up and put them into dog crates in 50-degree temperature and give them a space blanket and see how long they last.
That's the level we're at right now. That's the level of outrage, is that you want them to understand the psychological and the physical damage to one's health that is happening here. And I mean, if you don't have your family and your health with you, you have, but they need to be held accountable. If it calls to mind Flores' trial, which was about, I think, something along the same lines about the treatment of detained immigrants, so we need another Flores case, and perhaps more drastic than that. We need a Hague. We need a Nuremberg for the things that have been done to these people and these children.
I'm with you. We need to start locking people up. Ashton, I appreciate your thoughts. Good on you for the work that you do. Thank you for sharing, and thank you for continuing to share, because the more you get out there, the more you wake people up. Hopefully, the more we do vote the bums out.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much. Ashton Taylor, I literally don't. I'm almost speechless. Horrible. Just horrible. Quick break. Right back.
This is the failure.